because it was going to happen in December. Limpopo. No opposition. Thank you very much. And in particular, let me thank the outgoing chair, Mr. Logo, for the way he has been running this committee. I'm not a scientist, I'm a newcomer yet. So he was a scientist, he is still a scientist. And we will still benefit from this input here. I'm not sure what the, maybe the ANC wants to send him to Burundi, I'm not sure yet. But we wish him all of the best in this endeavor. And to members of this committee, we look forward to your support and guidance. Mine is just a simple cup to coordinate the activities of this committee. And in particular here, we have the department with the DG here who was witness to this fair, open election conducted by our judge there, Judge Zemba. And I think we must just proceed and get into the agenda. Let me welcome you, the DG and team. I'm sure as we proceed, you will just introduce the whole of the team and so on. You are familiar with all the members who are here. And I see the PMG is here, Sassel is here, and the committee is represented. I have received one apology from Mr. Mumano. And I think we must just accept that apology and go. In terms of the agenda that I have in front of me, we've got consideration of the annual reports that will be done by the DST, and the fourth term program that I want members to adopt, and the minutes. We've got two sets of minutes, the 4th and the 11th of September. I don't think there will be any other program from there. I would want them to check if there will be any announcements and so on. The only apology I have is that the catering team is begging to bring the tea up because the doctor is not ready. So please bear with that one. Immediately when it comes, we just see if we can just have a quick break before the tea is enough. We have to keep us posted when it comes to that one. Are there any other apologies? No? Farinda Muhammad, and you've got Ms. DJ Nyandu as well. Nyandu. So, anything you want to say before we proceed? No? Alright.
I thought the person was nominated for it.
I look nice, don't we? Can you just test all of them?
Yeah, we just did this. Yeah, what I said, this one does work. So I think all I would like to say is that we welcome the Godfrey Willis Fund. I have the pleasure of having worked with him for a long time in Minerals and Energy. And he got on quite well, and I'm sure that he will run this committee very well, and he will be very happy with him. So he's already having formally nominated the second I am just done that, so I am just further welcome to the committee.
That's sensible. I'm moving. Mr. Blaché, are you sure you're comfortable with that?
Mr. Chairman, let me also say welcome to my big brother. I don't know whether you want me to sing the song of FNB, but it's nice to see you in the chair, and I sincerely hope we will have a fruitful year ahead of us. In fact, I know we will, and we will try and make your time here as comfortable as possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now we can proceed. Okay. I'm not sure how to handle this one, but I think we should just see if there is any progress. We can all on the wheelchair cannot come up because of the
technology.
Yeah. to look that far. And I wouldn't want to know you hypnotize me. I wanted that when you start here not to deny that opportunity to be present. But let's just check how it goes. I would maybe want to skip the annual reports and then go to other methods like the setup and see if by then she will be shooting me. But let me hear what you want to do.
Just for the last time, I'm saying what a tragic coincidence. This morning when we walked onto my Kesha bus, there was no water, so we all had to catch the Elliot bus so that we could take a shower here in Parliament. And this are not working either, so that's all
I'm that's why Parliament goes to the people.
Okay.
Very fortunate if the shower is in the jungle, if I've jumped and then I find there's no water.
Yeah, it's not a good sign. let's check the following. DG, you just have to bear with us for the next 5 to 10 minutes. So keep you waiting. Why don't you check the thing? I want to check the minutes. Let's just go through the minutes quickly before we come to the clock. The minutes of the 4th of September. Remember to... I wasn't part of the group meeting, so... No, they never thought I was part of the group meeting. Yeah. Let's say the 4th of September, members have had an opportunity to go through the minutes. The next December 24th. Members have seen that. And the problem? Let's do the problem first. Because I don't think members have had the time to get the minutes. We're starting in October. I'll just go through it like it's in front of me. The 9th of October, where we want to have hearings with the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research on its annual report. That is the Tuesday. And the following Tuesday, we'll have hearings on the HRC on its annual report. And the following Tuesday, that is the 3rd, hearings on the National Research Foundation, also annual report. And then the end of October, the 30th, hearings with the South African Council for National and Scientific Professions, also on your report, and with AISA, hearings on the Africa Institute of Art of South Africa, on the annual report. That is for October, and then we go to November. We have hearings also with the Academic of Sciences of South Africa, and Sunita Lutra on their annual report. The following Tuesday is presentation by the Southern Science of South Africa, Square Kilometer Array, the FKA project. And then the following Tuesday, on the 20th of November, which will be the last day of our meeting, I suppose, we'll do the adoption of the reports on the consideration of annual reports. Of the department, this one, and then entity. And we have to then adopt the annual reports and start doing the program for adoption of the consideration and adoption of the program for next year. The only thing that I need to be advised on is that this report was not yet tabled formally. I was just wanted to say that we don't want to call you back on a technicality. Members, can I get adoption of the program?
Sure.
Let's take the Mokos, come back to you and then Mr. Bashir.
Sorry to be pedantic, Chair. Seems to the 20th of November, in the column under agenda, the 2008 first program for the 2008. In the 20th November 2007, the last paragraph in that column, the year should be 2008.
thank you very much for that invitation. We thank both of them. The other one should be 2007. The annual report and the next one should be 2008. Thank you.
If I'm not mistaken, I think on issue 36, this is actually the stress one have on the clinical presentation. It's not academic of science, it's academic of science. Because the expert and the children who want to be trained for academic of science. And like many in the world, it's academic of science. It's 1 hour academic of science. So, very important.
You see, we're still learning. Thanks.
I move the adoption of it.
Thank you very much. Can you second that? Thank you very much. All right, this one is also. And I don't get any signs here. Of this law coming in or silver coming back. The minute. The 4th of September. Remember that you had a chance this morning to go through the minutes? If not, let members go through the minutes for the next 5 minutes. And those who want to break for some water and juice, let's do that. For the next 5 minutes should be adequate. And during this time, let's just check if we're winning what we see. Okay. The tea's okay. Members, let's break for 10 minutes of tea then. No, we don't want to do it in the morning. The duties are just for 10 minutes.
What those two corrections shall we do?
That we want to comment on any corrections or anything before we adopt.
I accept it and my apologies. I realize that this is the last but one page. If you look at page three, okay, page three, Chandler pointed out to the committee. I know we've adopted the minutes, but none of these here. The second paragraph from clause one, third paragraph, DSC pointed out that Transnet could approach the Department of Public Enterprise which had a contingency fund for such scenarios. That's not exactly what was said. We said that DTE on behalf of Transnet could approach National Treasury to make use of contingency reserves in respect of the expenses that they feared they would incur if they had to effect some conversion from, say, analog to digital technology in the area that would be earmarked for this question. In the defined area. So it doesn't quite convey the correct meaning there. So we'll work on the formulation then, but I think you got what I mean. I just got this after the adoption. I don't know if members would agree with me that.
I don't think it was transmission. Let's adopt it on this. Is there any clarifications on the show we can accept it? All right. We on just go back to the 11th of September then. Any corrections? No corrections? Okay. Anybody for adoption? Okay, I can put them for the end if you reluctant.
Yes. I have no idea why people are so reluctant. They first said it.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kenneth, thank you very much. You know, sometimes you must lead if people are reluctant too. Members, the letter for tabling has been sent. So the person who does the tabling, because it's not in the tabling, is not here. So I'm just saying to members for the record that the process, formal process has not been completed, but the letter for tabling has been documented. And we would want us to just speed that process with other reports. So that by the time we deal with them, we covered all procedural matters. We just left with one point really, which is on the agenda. And before I give over to you, I think we must just wish the former chairperson of this committee a happy birthday. It is birthday today. We were trying to check if we should organize a cake. He tells me that he has never had a cake in his life. A birthday cake. Well, then, happy birthday once more, Chair. Once a chair, always a chair, you see. So if I call the chair person, you must just accept that as well. DJ, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also first extend, I think, our congratulations as a department to you, Mr. Oliphant. We do hope that we'll have good working relationship with you and, of course, the committee. Secondly, let me also thank, I think, the outgoing chair for, I think, good and excellent working relationship that we've had with him and his leadership, I think, in the last year, at least as a DG. I think we've fought on things of principle and we've agreed on things that take the country forward. So we thank him very much for his leadership. And then let me introduce the team. On my extreme right is Kholi Malekholwane. She's responsible for finances in the department. She's the CFO. Next to her is Mr. Daniel Moaki. He is the person who makes sure that the department runs very, very smoothly. He's our senior program manager. And then on my right is Makotini Mashele, who is the head of strategy within department. And then across, of course, it's Veli, who you all know, and Nelvis, who is, I think, the minister of the full delegation that I'm bringing along. What I'd like to do the outline of the presentation is to give a little bit of background to contextualize the annual report, and then we'd like to share with you the expenditure growth, really a recap on how the science and technology budget has grown in the last 4 or 5 years, and the rate at which we use the money will give you a sense of that. And then we'll probably drill down to the spending per program of the GST. And then we thought it is also important to give you an update on our expenditure on research and development. This committee has, I think, been supportive in ensuring that we reach our target of 1% of R&D spent as a percentage of the GDP by 2008. And then we'll give some highlights of the achievements, both at what the GST does as well as the entities that report to us. Just the highlights, because I think these entities will be coming to present their annual report in much more detail and quickly. In this slide, we thought it would be useful to give a trajectory of the policy instruments of the GST, starting from the white paper, Science and Technology White Paper in 1996, where the concept of a national system of innovation was developed. And then we moved to the Research and Development Strategy in 2002, which had both the science and technology missions. And we've given an example of some of these science and technology missions. And then, of course, the department was created as a new Department of Science and Technology, in other words, separating from arts and culture in 2004. And then a new governance framework that clarified the role of the GST as a cross-cutting department, focusing on mainly human capital and knowledge platforms that cut across the science system, and other government departments being responsible for science and technology issues that relate to science and technology in conventional sectors, so to speak. Now, recently, last year in 2006, we had two things. The one is we had the National System of Innovation reviewed by a team from the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD. And the purpose of that review was to do two things. One was to give strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats of the system of innovation, and also to benchmark our system in relation to other systems of countries that are similar to us. I do not remember us presenting that report to this committee, so it might be something that would be useful for us to do at an appropriate stage, because I think it gives a very nice overview of people from outside looking at our system and the good things and the bad things about the system and the opportunities. So maybe at another point, what we'll do at the next slide is just give you a high-level output of what came out of that review. And then we've also now finalized the 10-year innovation plan for the system, which is predominantly saying the role of science and technology in the knowledge-based economy is extremely important, and we have two main foci of the 10-year plan. The one is something which we call grand challenges, and the other one is a huge focus on developing the human capital that will drive the system. I'll give a little bit of snippet on these again in the next slide. Now, the findings then of this OECD review at the high level was that the human capital for science, engineering, and technology in South Africa is suboptimal. In other words, we don't have enough critical mass of people to drive the science, engineering, and technology. They also recommended that a long-term planning framework be developed. And this 10-year innovation plan is a response, I think, to that. And then they say the governance framework needs more vertical and horizontal integration. Maybe let me explain that a little bit. Horizontal integration means that the interface between the basic research that gets done at the university and applied research and technology development that is done in the Science Council, as well as the work that is done in the private sector, needs to have coordination or seamless integration in one form or the other. Most of you are aware of our attempt to set up the Technology Innovation Agency, which is an attempt to glue, I think, the horizontal entities or the horizontal aspects of the chain and the new concept of centers of competence in order to make sure that the private sector and the science councils and universities work together. Vertical integration means that you need to have a mechanism where from the presidency to other structures that looks at the governance framework of the science system, including the ministry and the people who are responsible for the implementation, there is a conversation that happens seamlessly. We are still working on that. It's not an easy thing to do. We're doing our bit from our side as a department to integrate what we do with other government departments, but I think we'll have to find a way of making a re-look at the National Advisory Council Act, for instance, and the role that it plays to try and provide this vertical integration. The innovation chasm, we have some instruments to bridge what is happening on the basic research side and what's happening in the economy. And then they pointed out that science and technology and innovation for the second economy should be pronounced and be a bit more visible. And we'll talk about, I think we did indicate when we came here at the beginning about the approach we are taking on our strategic plan about setting up a public benefit foundation, which is going to make sure that it focuses on this platform. So that's just the highlights of the findings of the review.
Just before you proceed, let me just take a commercial break for this one. Those who need some tea, I'm told it's outside, you can just grab it and come back. Let's not just go, you know, just disturb your meeting. And secondly, DG, you say that you've got something there, but you haven't given it to the committee yet. What has been... I'm just checking.
No, actually, we have still, actually, we have gone through the report through NASH. NASH presented the report here, so at least we have the data, but we do not know how you will present it, but NASH is presented, but we will not mind also to get it from you, from your side.
Fine. I was just taking advantage of this commission break.
Sorry. Mr. Chairman, can you also give us the meaning of OECD.
Let's
I'm not talking about the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. I'm asking how much did you pay for that asset seeing that you appointed the board of SABC? the commercial break, you should see. How much did you pay for that?
So let's do the calculation. Can you say it slower? OECD.
Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development.
Thank you very much.
All right. With your permission, Chair, we would be happy to make the copies available at an appropriate time. We would be happy to share with the committee our interpretation of the report, but I think most importantly, our response to the report. I think that's probably the most important. We could probably do it hand in hand with the 10-year innovation plan that we finalized in the department. Now, just the high-level principles then of this 10-year plan is a plan that is trying to articulate an innovation path to contribute fundamentally towards the transformation of the economy to a knowledge-based economy. And it is formed by a principle of triage that says we need to identify certain areas where South Africa has areas of competence and focus attention on some of those areas. That does not mean that someone who wants to do science for the science sake would be prevented, but we do need to, like any other developing country, focus attention on some of the areas and nurture them to some economic and social benefit. We should be having certain global objectives in this, and then we cannot pretend that all the problems of the past have been solved in South Africa, so we're finding a way in which the transformation of the society benefits from this plan in the next 10 years. of course, we recognize that this is based on the fact that for us to make a meaningful contribution to the economy, we may have to put some investment in this regard. And the DST has been asked there by National Treasury to quantify the cost of this plan in implementation. Again, we can come and give you the details of what the plan talks about, but it's just the high-level principles of the plan. Now, on the budget and expenditure growth, this slide shows that around from 2005 to 2010, the budget of the science system will grow from roughly 2 billion to about 4 billion. The last 2 years, as you can see, if you look at the amount that's been voted and the amount that we've spent, we've tried very, very hard to stick very, very closely to spending 99% or a little over 99% of the money that gets allocated. And this slide shows that only 0.16% of the budget was unused, and the expenditure then was 99.84% last year. We have an unqualified audit with one matter of emphasis, which is something outside, I think, our control. It relates to the acquisition of the DST building. When we acquired that building in the CSIR land, and the land has now been evaluated. However, the title deed, or the process of getting the title deed, has been finalized. Now, technically, all government buildings are supposed to be owned, or they should appear on the asset register of DPW, and DPW would not have, I think, our asset or the DST building on their asset register unless the title deed has been sorted out. So that's the technicality that we could not do anything. It's a delay, I think, in the deed office. We've had six pieces of legislation developed, and I think last week I was told that the HFRC bill and the AGF bill have been approved by Parliament. So we're very, very happy about that, and we are continuing to look at the others, of course. If we look at the spending per each program, what we have on the slide is the actual expenditure on each program against, I think, the budget that was allocated to each of the programs. And as you can see, almost all the programs have really tried to stick to spending over 99%. And again, you can go through each one in detail. Administration, 99.04, Science and Technology, Aspect Services, which we call FITES. We used to call that spend 99.59. International Cooperation and Resources, we say ICR, they spend 99.89. Frontier Science and Technology, 99. And then Government Sectoral Programs and Coordination, 99.7, and the total of 99.8. This is a slide that shows that we think that we are on track to the target of 1% of GDP money for research and development, and the R&D survey, which is done by CESI at HSRC, shows that in 2005 and 2006, we are now at 0.91% of the GDP spent on R&D. So we think that this, together with the introduction of the tax incentive by the private sector, will be able to help us to go to a target of 1% by 2008. Now, what we'll do in the next minute is just to go through the highlights of each of the programs of the DST. One of the functions of the corporate services of the DST is to ensure that we have a strengthened governance of the institutions that report to the DST. And the shareholders' compacts were signed with all the institutions that report to the DST. We also had a monitoring and evaluation synthesis review of the science, engineering, and technology institutions completed. And this also gave us a sense of what are the things that are working well, not in each institution, but across the institutions, and what are the problems, and we are engaging with the institutions to come up with a system-wide response to the issues that were identified as pitfalls in the synthesis review. And then we also are trying to have an enhanced integration through establishment of stakeholder forums. This year, I think we've already had two meetings between the minister and the chairpersons of the boards of the institutions that report to the TFT. I chair a forum where the CEOs of the four institutions that report to the TFT meet every 6 months, and we also try and harmonize the challenges that relate to issues of finance by having chief financial officers forum, which is chaired by our CFO, of course. And these have proved to be extremely useful in making sure that if there are problems or challenges, they are identified early. If we have ideas that we would like our institutions to respond to or to think about, we have this forum, and they are very, very, very useful in that regard. We've had increased coverage of science and technology related activities in the media. We've had lots of science and technology related issues on Good Morning South Africa and SABC Africa, which is called now Mining Weekly Engineering News and so forth. And then, of course, we've also tried to make sure that we have a content-driven media discourse on science and technology issues. The international exhibition that we have every year, we had a successful one last year. We also had last week the launch of the International Center for Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology, which we believe was publicized widely. The president launched this. It's situated at the Institute for Infectious Diseases and Molecular Biology at UCT. We are very proud of the internship program that we've jointly implemented with the NRF and other science councils last year. We had a total of 168 interns that participated in this program. Now, the Science and Technology Expert Services, which we call CITES, there was a development and an approval by Cabinet last year of the Hydrogen and Fuel Cell Technology Strategy. We are beginning to implement this strategy. We now have launched the Biotechnology Advisory Committee, which looks at the biotech strategy and how well it's implemented, so and advise, I think, accordingly. We have set up the National Indigenous Knowledge Systems Office within the DST. I'd like to invite you, when you have the time, to visit the IKS laboratory that has been set up at the Medical Research Council that looks at traditional medicine and doing some refinement on these traditional medicines. We're very, very happy with the progress that we see in this laboratory. And then, of course, we've had public consultation on intellectual property rights bill from publicly funded research, and we are busy taking the inputs from the stakeholders before we can finalize the bill. The National Advisory Council on Innovation, NACI, provided useful evidence-based advice to the minister. It provided a document on race and gender equity, and they are requesting that we consider a mechanism whereby the science councils not only increase the number of researchers, but they find means and ways of having gender-based research within the institutions, and this is under consideration at the DST. And then they developed a profile of best practices in the National System of Innovation, and they've given us a comprehensive report of the infrastructure that is required to attain the goals of the National System of Innovation. In the international cooperation and resourcing, we won the bid towards the ICGEB, the African component that I've already talked about. We hosted a successful G77 in China Science and Technology Ministerial in Brazil, where there was a recommendation of setting up an organization that is going to enhance collaboration between the G77 countries and China on science and technology issues. We participated in the Africa Union Heads of State Summit in Ethiopia, where the focus was on science and technology for Africa's development. And then, of course, we successfully hosted the international exhibition last year in October, I think. And then we had a successful conference on knowledge for Africa's development in partnership with the World Bank and the government of Finland. We now have launched the cooperation framework on innovation between South Africa and Finland, which we call COFISA. This program is useful in the sense that it's giving us an experience of how Finland has tried to have innovation systems in small parts of Finland. This program has targeted, I think, Western Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Gauteng as pilot provinces where you can develop an innovation system within the province and use it as part of the development of the province. So it's an excellent learning that we're getting from the Finns in this regard. We, of course, hosted experts from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development on science and technology policy pertaining to our NSI. We talked about this. And then we've got improved participation in the European Framework Program 6 in the areas of information and communication technology, aeronautics, and social sciences. And we are happy that we've now been able, with a little bit of our own funding, to liberate a total of 138 million from EU since the launch of this program called EFSTAP 2 years ago. EFSTAP stands for European South African Science and Technology Advancement Program. It's a program that tries to make sure that the partnership between South Africa and the EU is enhanced. On the frontier science and technology, we've successfully had the licensing of internationally competitive technologies by KEPBio, one of the biotechnology innovation centers, the funding agencies, and BioPath. We've also successfully hosted the second BioJPS conference in Durban to attract private sector investment and participation in our biotech-related research and technology-related activities. The microsatellite Sumbandila set has been completed. It's ready for launch. And then we've had the approval by Cabinet for the establishment of the Space Agency, and we are working on the bill and the business case as required by National Treasury to fast-track the setting up of the Space Agency. Last year, we commissioned the Center for High Performance Computing, and it already has three exciting projects, and we are now working on phase two of the Center for High Performance Computing here in Rosebank. And then there was an approval of the Youth Into Science Strategy, and we've also launched the South African Research Chairs Initiative, where 21 chairs were announced by our minister at the end of last year. Because I think Thursday, if I'm not mistaken, tomorrow he will be announcing, I think, another 51 chairs in this regard. Cabinet approved the human capital and innovation-related activities for the Pebble Bed Modular Reactor, and also to have a mechanism where we can expand our local knowledge for the entire PBMR technology value chain. On the Innovation Fund, one of our early stage funding instruments, there were a number of successful projects that I think were funded by the Innovation Fund, and the list is in the slide. And then, of course, we have developed the strategy for supporting the African Origins platform, and it has been completed. African Origins is mainly the paleosciences work, which is led by, I think, Brex University and other people who work in this area. Now, the last program, the Government Sectoral Program and Coordination, we are very happy that the R&D tax incentives has now been established, and I think it's ready for rollout, where I think companies can get 150% of expenditure as a tax relief. And then we've signed an R&D cooperation agreement with Airbus, where they focus on how we can develop biocomposite material that they need, I think, for Airbus. We have strengthened the management and the output of the Advanced Manufacturing Technology Strategy and the Advanced Metals Initiative. And of course, we've also made sure that in the tooling capacity, we expand the Institute for Advanced Tooling. We have another center that's been set up, I think, at Sun University of Technology and Stellenbosch University. And we have a range of science and technology for social impact projects, including the Abalone Grow Out project, which has proven to be successful. The phase one of aquaculture trials initiative here in Stellenbosch has now been completed. We have finalized the study on cold chain and post-harvest technology. Here, a lot of farmers that export their goods to the rest of the world find that by the time their food gets to the other side of the world, it's either not in good condition or it's damaged, and therefore we need to find a way in which we and the ARC find a way to support and develop technology to make sure that you preserve these things in transit. We are doing a feasibility study to look at the research and development program for the marula industry in the Limpopo. Now, we mentioned that one of the responsibilities that we have as a DST under the new governance framework is to provide information to the rest of the government, cabinet in particular, about how the science and technology system is performing. So we are setting up a research information management system, RIMS, which is going to allow us to get the high-level key performance indicators for the science and technology management in line with the new governance framework. We also try to launch a knowledge economy forum where in each of the government departments we try and have science and technology managers that discuss what they do on science and technology in their own government and find a way in which we get alignment in this regard. And it's a platform that allows us to discuss policy priorities like the 10-year plan. It's not a DST plan, it's a science plan for the whole country. And then, of course, also make sure that when we require or we indicate to them that they have to gather the data on making sure that we have a full understanding of the performance of the NSI, they understand why we have to do that. We also have a number of programs where we've started a program to look at how we can enhance, I think, the output of the fluorochemicals expansion program. As you know, that NEXA a couple of years ago has found that a lot of fluorochemicals industry can come out of the West accepting at NEXA. And the first phase of this research and technology started at NEXA. We now want to expand it. And therefore, we have started to do the EIAs and look at the feasibility study for certain plants that can develop the fluorochemicals. We have funded a project to look at improvement of biofuel testing capability at the South African Bureau of Standards. And then we've also supported a research program on the beneficiation of byproducts and co-products from biofuels production with other government departments. Now I'd like to move and give you just a quick highlight on the achievements from the institutions, starting off with the CSIR. They've set up a center of innovation, which I think was launched, an advanced material for improved aerospace and automotive systems, because these are important sectors for South Africa. And then I think they're in the process of, I believe, setting up a small startup company on this multi-cam, which is an imaging system that allows you to monitor, I think, the transmission lines if they are in good condition or when they have something called corona that sits on the transmission line. Innovative radar technology for persistent surveillance, I think this has been finalized and we are working with them to have a flying object on our East Coast that is going to use the technology for our surveillance of our shores, both for people who want to smuggle abalone and others who have illegal activities. We are setting up a space agency and we are going to have a large number of spatial data, but that is useless unless we have a mechanism to add value to the data, and therefore they've set up a group that looks at geospatial technologies to help us manage disasters. They got a top award for portable landing light system, And then, of course, they are our partners in the implementation of the high-performance computing in Cape Town. And then they've also designed a long-range day and night camera called Cyclone. I suppose this is for military and defense-related activities. The NRF, it continues to provide the state-of-the-art research equipment and infrastructure in their entities. And they are listed here, South African Astronomical Observatory, HMO, at Amana Bakrao, Institute of Aquatic Biodiversity Earth Observation Network, Zoological Gardens and Chamberlain. And they have a very impressive profile of the number of students that have been supported through the NRF grant, and the numbers are there. They also administer a funding scheme called STRIP, which is a Technology Human Resource and Industry Partnership with the DTI, and again you can see the numbers of students that are coming out of their program. Now, on their main program of knowledge generation, they have 3,000 peer-reviewed publications, 298 books, 254 contributions and chapters, published conference proceedings, and then we have, of course, a number of industry-related funding out of TRIP, with 6 patents and 166 products and artifacts have come out of the industry-related funding, and then 371 firms participated in this co-funding scheme, and 210 of these were small and medium enterprises. We saying, despite the fact that we have these numbers of human capital coming out of the system, however, the comparison of the PhD that we produce in science and engineering per thousand in the age group, which is important, 25 to 34, is still very, very low in South Africa. As you can see, we're sitting at 0.005%. So we'd like to up the ante in terms of the numbers that we need to produce in this regard. The HSRC, one of the units, won the National Science and Technology Forum Award for making outstanding contribution to science, engineering, and technology. They have three books published on the critical areas of land economy, women, and democracy, and the results of their research reports on used extensively to finalize the National Strategic Plan on HIV and AIDS. And Tourism and Development Initiative has been established, and they completed, of course, our national R&D survey that I showed, the results of which I showed earlier on. On AISA, they conducted studies that look cognizant of socio-economic political issues within the SADC region, focus on research areas of peace and security, democracy, and sustainable development, and provided material on arduous and complex roads to South Africa's peaceful political settlement, and that's the title and the volume, and then they also contributed to the internship program of the 158 interns that I talked about. So in conclusion, Chair, we've recognized that we've had a huge budget and expenditure growth at the PNC in the last couple of years. However, we do spend the money, we think, very, very well, both at the program as well as at the institutions. There is a nice growth on our gross expenditure on R&D as a percentage of the GDP. In other words, we are in line to reaching our 1% target by 2008. There is a good, as I say, performance by both our programs at the DFT and the institutions that report to the DFT. The last slide, or the last but two slides, we show that even though we have made some successes and some inroads, but there's still a lot of work to be done on human capital and generating knowledge. We still have to find the right set of incentives and mechanisms to translate our research results into useful activities in the economy. We do need to make sure that science and technology supports the conventional sectors, and of course we need the knowledge infrastructure falling behind in this regard. I think with that, we thank you.
Thank you, DG. Members, this is your report for engagement. I'll take three questions or three members, and I'll request that you just take the questions as they come to here. So, Prof. Fasini first, and Mr. Mokola.
any case, first question I'd like to ask, you know, we have been told about this 1% of R&D, that we're approaching that very rapidly. This has been going on for the last 14 years that I've been here, more or less, you see. I really would like to know, what is the gap like now between us and the more advanced countries, Scandinavia and so on? Have they progressed very much faster now we lag behind? I would like to know. Question two about the PBMR, you see, I've understood now that government has committed itself to the PBMR, and are there any figures to tell us what the total spending of the PBMR to date, and what is the final cost before production is likely to be? And thirdly, still on the PBMR, you know, the problem about the high-level waste is certainly there will be high-level waste coming from the PBMR. I'd like to know where this is going to be stored, because at present the only site of storing high-level waste is at Kudah. And Kudah, as far as I understand, is rapidly becoming full. Now, at one stage in the Department of Mineral Energy, it suggested that they were looking for deep-level sites and cavities where you can store underground and retrieve if necessary for reprocessing and so on. But I believe that is now being given up, but I don't know what is replacing that. So, but clearly it's a crucial issue about the high-level waste, because there are serious problems if we cannot solve that problem. So I'd like to know what is happening around the high-level waste. Thank you. I leave
a few questions. Thanks. Let's take Mr. Morgan and then a response, and then we'll come back to Mr. DeKalb and Mr. Hensley. Morgan.
Thank you, Chair. On page 3 of the presentation, the principle of the 10-year innovation plan, that first slide there, it talks of the triage in decision making, and then one of them being the focus on South Africa's areas of competence that would need to be one of the objectives for quantifying the investment in innovation. Now, these competencies, I think, is a key issue. Which competencies are we focusing our attention on, and how do we know that those are the correct competencies relative to our competition in the marketplace for commercialized science and technology products and services in particular? So I think that's the one question that I would like to answer. The second one is on the spending program 2006-2007 on page 4, the second slide. I don't know where in the annual report process or another process of the portfolio committee we get to look at the quarterly spending, at least see when the department has spent most of its money. The first, second, third or fourth quarter, is there the money held back, and then people start to realize we're getting close to the end of the financial year, and we need to start spending money rapidly before we can ask for more money from Treasury. The sort of incremental budgeting approach instead of the performance-based budgeting approach. So just the quarterly sort of spending pattern, I think, is the main issue there. Lastly, Chair, we see the focus on the knowledge economy and information society. I'm not sure if I understand this correctly, and I've been here for almost 8 years now. I've been a member of this committee for a short while. I used to be a member of the Portfolio Committee on Communications at some stage, but I still don't understand its focus, the knowledge economy. What is it? What are these knowledge systems, and how does my great grandmother, who has a cure for an ailment, make that information available as part of the knowledge systems or something. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. Let's take on this point and then let's come back to that.
Thank you.
First question, Professor Mohammed, 1%. The other developed countries, the average, we always try and benchmark against the OECD if you are looking at developed countries. I think the average is 2.5. Recently, within the European Union, I think they are targeting the countries that are to probably put something around 3% on GDP. So if we wanted to compare ourselves with that, we are then way below that, but maybe we should sort of in between, I think, the developed countries. What we will be doing is on this plan, once we finalize, I think, the estimate of what it would take to implement it, we can then probably come back and give you a sense of what the next target would be if we wanted to get closer to the developed countries. The other information in this regard is that we've started to now do something called the innovation survey. We recognize that it is important for us to have these targets on how much we're spending, but we also think it's important for us to have a sense of what are we getting out of this money. I think the first of this survey was published last year, and it got some useful results in terms of the impact of the spending. The PBMR figures, we're told that the demo plant and the total investment at the moment is sitting roughly at 6 billion for the PBMR. And then on the high-level waste, yes, as far as I know, I'm not so sure I'm on firm ground here, is that the waste will still be kept or stored at I think it's the name of the place in the Northern Cape. However, we are looking at the mechanism of using some of the heat that comes from the waste. It's not going to change, I think, the fact that you still have to dump the waste somewhere. But I'm not familiar with any of the latest recommendations as to what we can do. We've been told that the estimates in terms of the number of PBMRs that we could build and the size of the storage in the Northern Cape in Falby is still enough to be able to accommodate the waste. The three questions from Mr. Mocker. We've identified perhaps five areas as areas of competence, I think, in the 10-year plan. The first one is an area which we call farmer to farmer. The first farmer is as an F and the second farmer is with a TH. Now here we are saying that we pride ourselves as a country with the third largest biodiversity in the world, but we tend to pride ourselves and say we have to conserve this biological diversity, and we're saying it's fine, but we're saying that also probably use that advantage to sustainably exploit this biodiversity, not only plants, but maybe for medicinal purposes. So that's the first area, but we also want to then have a biotechnology platform that deals with perhaps setting up a pharmaceutical platform or an industry in South Africa using, as I say, both this biodiversity, indigenous knowledge systems, and new developments in biotechnology or in genomics. So we'll be looking at pharmaceutical, also industrial biotech or industrial application, as well as food security. We think that, as I say, we have an advantage on that particular one because of the biodiversity and the huge knowledge that we have on medicinal plants in South Africa. So we cannot categorically say these are correct, but we think if we put our efforts around these areas, we should be able to get somewhere. We have a number of universities, including our friends from the CSIR, with some capacities in this regard. If these capacities were harnessed together, we think we can take this somewhere. The second one is in energy security. and we have a number of proposals that we are making to look at research and development to help us provide our own energy security in South Africa. You are probably aware of the good work that's been done at the University of Johannesburg on tin filling, that the highest efficiency of converting solar energy into useful electricity. We think that in the development of CDMR, and we are also aware that with Eskom looking at a better way of cleaning the coal, these are some of the research activities that we want to get involved with to make sure that we, one, provide a cleaner coal for mitigating climate change issues, and secondly, take advantage of the technologies that we have and the conditions we have here to make sure that we have energy security. So there's a focus on that. The third area is on the utilization of space for societal benefits. We found that modest investment in space can, one, help you to have your own industrial development and space activities, as well as to use space for disaster management, land use management, biodiversity management, and health-related activities. The list goes on and on. The fourth area is an area of a global change, in particular climate change, where we know that the Southern Sea is something we have. If you look at this region, the Southern region, the two oceans meet here. And therefore, in understanding global climate change, the understanding of atmospheric current, and the interaction with the rest of the biosphere is an important contributor to climate change, and we want to have a very big group that looks at both a proper understanding of climate change on the one hand, but then to develop mitigation plans on the basis of the bigger models that we get, but focusing them on Southern Africa and the rest of the continent. Why is it that I don't remember the system? Oh yeah, the last one is human and social dynamics, which is really to understand a number of aspects in the interface between science and technology and society on the one hand, but the range of challenges that we have in terms of who we are using paleosciences and what are the expected behaviors of people in going to the future, and this is led by the human and social sciences. As I say, we believe they are relevant for South Africa, and maybe that's one of the reasons why we believe they are important. But we also think in some of these areas, we have sufficient groups in South Africa that have certain capacities. We just want to bring them together so that we have a platform. I don't know how to respond to your standing program question, but we do at the EST on a quarterly basis monitor the program performance. Senior program manager probably can give you the details of the mechanisms and instruments that we put in place to make sure that we monitor the spending every quarter. In fact, the CFO does provide us information on a monthly basis in terms of the expenditure, but if it's necessary for us to visit you every quarter, we always like to catch up. Hopefully the weather will always be as good as today. I'll rather leave the question of the knowledge-based economy to the time when we give the presentation, because I can explain it to you. But what we are really, in a nutshell, trying to do is to make sure that the work that we're doing in science and technology has benefits to the sector, not generally information in an ICT specific area. I'll give you an example of two clusters. One is a cluster in Finland of forestry, where they wanted to remain competitive in the forestry cluster, and then they organized a number of universities and research institutions to have a focused research and development program in support of the forestry cluster, both in terms of the forestry as a sector, but also the value addition that could be derived from the forestry cluster for making paper, furniture, and so forth. So that's what we mean, is to make sure that your sectors have got a lot of knowledge embedded, so can have knowledge driving the sector of the economy. I've noticed other hands, but let me just highlight issues that I think we must follow up on, teacher. The question that you raised in about the 10-year innovation plan, I think we should return to that, not today, but at some point, just to get some more engagement, particularly on the question raised by Mr. Marco. I think we should do that, including the question of the knowledge-based economy, so that we don't lose those ones. Prof, I know that this question of Falcons and Quebec has been a sore point for some time. We shall have to return to that matter. I understand your response, DG, but the matter that we have to respond return to. Prof asked a question about the cost to date on the 3PMR. Do you know how much we have spent? Noting that it's about six billion projects. If we don't know, that maybe it's something that we can help it.
It's a short question. We'll rather investigate that as compared to you.
Prof, so the little spend over, we'll come back to that question as well, about what the cost has been to date on the 3PMR. My recollection was that we have already spent, maybe not even disclose the figure of the issue. And you know that we appropriated some money last week just to deal with the matter towards the end of the year. So we have to just confer with DP on the matter, just to return to the chair.
I agree, Chair. I was going to say that we need to come back also to part of the issue at some stage.
I've noted Mr. Tebe and Mr. Anthony, and then I'll take the next two hands.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also raise a few questions, but before I do so, perhaps congratulate the department for a very consistent record in terms of expenditure persons with regard to the budget. What we voted for, it would seem to me that the department spent very efficiently, economically and effectively. However, with the DG having kicked off with the issue of one network deficit and that relating to the 133 million rand building that they are occupying on the CSIR campus at the moment, I noticed that there are two other points. The first one on page 106 of the annual report itself, not the PowerPoint presentation. There, I think the Auditor General draws our attention to the fact that the processes followed to authorize access to the personnel and salary administration system known as PESEL and the basic accounting system known as SAS were found to be inadequate as the procedures for user profile management were only approved towards the end of the financial year. My question on that point is it a hybrid system that we are using in the department, or is it just one system? And the second one, of course, relates to the fact that the audit committee on page 107, out of the seven members, and there are different years there when they became members and switched to be members, and the DG is one of the members of the audit committee of our department. I realized that three out of seven resigned, albeit in different years. The question is, how many members of the audit committee still are active at the moment, and given the fact that there were four meetings held, and according to this report, the audit committee acquitted itself well and did everything that it had to do in terms of its own terms of reference. So I would like to know whether the committee has been replenished. And of course, the fact that there is no documentation, the other one says no documentation security policy was in place at the department, as the information security policy had only been approved by the executive committee towards the end of the financial year. Has that already been attended to? Is the policy in place and being implemented? That's my conclusion to say, I should also thank the department that is this research that's going on with regard to carbon sequestration from coal, because we have, as we know, huge deposits of coal in this country that will last us for, I think, over 100 years, we are told. And indeed, if carbon could be sequestrated from coal, and we know that that is one natural resource that we could use for energy and so forth. The last one, I think, Chairperson, is maybe I should raise this one in the second batch of questions, if you will permit me to raise this. But maybe I should leave it at that. Thank you very much.
If you might not get a second batch, continue. I'm just saying,
okay, the last one, Chairperson, is it relates to the innovation chasm and the actual products that are out there in the market. At some point, the department made a presentation to us, and they tried to show us as to what plans are in place to ensure human capital formation, so that that very innovation chasm is indeed in the long term sorted out. Could we get more specifics? I know reference has been made to more chairs being added, etc. But one would like to hear more in detail, because whilst one knows that the department is not, for instance, in charge of education, but there obviously will be that collaboration between the Department of Science and Technology and the Department of Education, etc., with regard to the human capital development in this country. Just more specifics on that, because I think it is a truism that the most technologically advanced economies in this world today are truly knowledge-based. And many are arguing that whilst many countries may be endowed with natural resources, the knowledge-based economies are the ones that are in the vanguard of the world economy today. Perhaps if you could just elaborate on that one. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The Minister indicates in the annual report that he was a bit concerned about the lack of awareness in the business community regarding the research and development tax incentive. Now, why is there this lack of awareness? Because I believe that this project has been on stream since late middle 2006. What is being done? Increase awareness among the business community regarding the tax incentives. That's the first one. The second one is, I wonder if the DG could perhaps tell us a little bit more about the work the department is doing with regard to the application of science and technology to the second economy and to poverty eradication. He did mention in passing the effect of science and technology on the second economy, but gave no details. If you could perhaps just expand on that just a little bit. And in the same vein, really, the focus of research being done by the department when it comes to poverty alleviation, the focus seems to be on income-deriving projects. And today we were given the examples of trout and abalone. But you know, in the past, the department has promoted various, numerous, similar poverty alleviation programs, a whole range, 20 or 30 different kinds of projects around the country. There's been beekeeping, mohair, hide, hydroponics, mushrooms, small-scale farming. Now, what has happened to all of those projects? Have there been any successes? If there have been successes, how are the successful projects, like the one we saw, where was it, in Bowman West? Was it Bowman West? Hydroponics project, which to us at the time seemed to be very successful. If successful, and if these other projects are successful, what is being done to roll them out, and who is rolling? Who is responsible, finally, for rolling these projects out? I would
imagine it would take a high level of coordination between this department and other departments, and especially local government, when it comes to rolling out successful projects. But here we don't hear enough of these things. We don't hear enough of successes. And I'm wondering, while research into income-deriving projects is important, is it not equally important to do some very basic research into things that would really assist poverty alleviation, such as cheap water, cheap sanitation, cheap and reliable energy? We don't hear enough of those. So I must admit that over the years of these reports, I've become a little disappointed, and perhaps the DG can tell me if I'm justified or not, a little bit disappointed in the application of science, the application of proper technology to the second economy and to poverty alleviation. Am I justified in my disappointment, or are we succeeding? Okay, that's the second question. The third is a very short one. With regard to internship program, with regard to the number of students going to be supported by SRIP, is there a monitoring mechanism to monitor the onward progress of these interns and of these students in terms of the jobs they take up and such things? Thank you.
Thank you very much. DJ?
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if I've told this committee about the story of a professor who used to go around giving lectures on nuclear physics in the U.S. We used to travel with the driver, and one day he was ill, and he was relating his disappointment at the fact that he couldn't give the lecture on that day because he was ill to the driver, and the driver said, "Don't worry, I will give the lecture. I've listened to your lecture many times." And he gave the lecture very, very well, and then came the question times, and he realized, the driver, that he did not know the answers to this question, so he said, "These questions are very easy. Even my drivers here can answer this question." So I can't answer all these questions. I'm referring to my drivers to answer this question. Then, audit committee, you know the numbers, and all you on the first one and the first.
Can you say that you are the professor?
That's right.
No, thanks, DG. Let me take three. The internship program, there is a monitoring system to check the progress of whether interns are making progress or not, and I think it's working well. Basically, when we start with a particular number, but we don't finish with that number because they get absorbed. They get full-time employment, some of them get contract employment. So I think there is a effective system in that regard. In terms of the audit committee members, in terms of the code of that has been adopted by the audit committee, members cannot serve for a period of more than 4 years. After 4 years, I think they have to terminate their membership. In terms of the chairperson, for example, last month or this last month as a chair, I finished his term as a chair. Dr. Mujaka is still there, still a member of the audit chair. Mr. D. Magan and L. Kaplan, I think they are both still members of the chair. And Mr. Driver is also a chair. And the other members, the attempt of the office, have come to an end. And I think our audit committee is performing well, and they're doing an excellent job. In terms of the information system and information security policy, it's true that it was approved a bit late, but there were things put in place to mitigate it. And the policy is in place, implemented, and never had to have problems in that regard.
Thank you, Vijay, and thank you, Chair. I think Ben has responded to the systems. I'm not sure if you're responding to the bus and the hotel. Oh, okay. Oh, all right. I would say that DG has already responded to the issue of buildings, and there isn't much that I can add to that. As he had mentioned, it was a technical issue that we did not have any control over. And when it comes to Hesel and Baal, the question was asked to say that are these systems hybrid or something else? And what I would want to say to that is that Baal and Hesel are not a hybrid system, and I'm not sure what the hybrid was, you know, is supposed to be asking. What I know is that they are transversal systems that are used across government, and Hesel processes our salaries, and Baal processes financial statements. And the audit of this was done in a very, maybe it was the first time it was done, and we expected it to complete a whole year. However, it wasn't done the same way with the regularity audit. However, there were mitigating factors or mitigating measures to ensure that there is no management override in terms of using the systems. And yes, the policies have been put in place right now for both our assets as well as our systems. With the assets, I would like to highlight the fact that we have the regulations in place, which is the Treasury regulation and the TFNA. Even though we didn't have a policy in place per se, this policy is just complementary to this regulation. Thank you.
Chair, can I just add one thing on the Baal and Hesel? We have an internal audit at the DST, and we've asked Honorable Sitebe that they follow up, I think, on this authorization within this system to make sure that, you know, we are on top of this thing. The second comment on carbon sequestration, yes, we will continue to work with ESCOM and others to fund this. As you say, it's an important part of the research that we have to do. I'm afraid we will still be with coal for a while. On the HCD and specific things that we are doing outside the chairs, we have an agreement at a high level with the Department of Education now, which is managed by the two deputy ministers, to follow up on things that fall on either leg of the two departments. But specific instruments that I think we've started at the DST, the internship program has already been talked about. But what we have realized is that the biggest bottleneck in terms of the human capital development in South Africa is students who qualify with their junior degrees. I think the number indicates that 2033, it's a revised number now, 16,900 plus minus students graduate with science and engineering technology degrees. So out of the 16,000, only 3,000, so almost a third, continue to do honors and masters. So the first thing then that we have started to do, we piloted it last year with a small amount of money, is to have an innovative bursary to capture those students or to increase the number of students. And the real the challenges are twofold why these students don't go to honors. The one is people, after 3 years of funding, they don't have, families don't have enough resources to sustain them, so they have to go and work. The other one is that the size of these bursaries that we've been giving out has been very, very minute. I think we've been giving out something like 7,000. So I think we piloted something, and we are going to continue this year. We've asked the National Treasury to give them something around 30,000. How many students then did we, 258 students that we've attracted with this new program into an honors, and hopefully, and I think the condition for this bursary is that they continue to do masters and PhD. At the same time, at masters and PhD level, this year we are going to increase the size of, again, the grants and the scholarships that we give, because we found that this is one of the reasons why people find it unattractive to continue. So these are specific interventions that we're doing. The other one is something called Professional Development Program.
a lot of researchers in the universities that probably start working in science centers with honors or masters don't have the opportunity to continue to do PhD and post-research studies in the form of postdoc and so forth. So we've started to do two things. One, we've started a program called Professional Development Program aimed at giving an opportunity and by the time out from young researchers at these places to develop themselves, they can either go overseas or study for a further degree. And then the other instrument is something which we call a postdoctoral fellowship. And the reason for this postdoc is that a lot of researchers or supervisors are unable to supervise students. And we found that a lot of problem happens when people don't complete their master's or PhD in time because the supervisors are caught up with other responsibilities. So what we are doing is to have a postdoctoral program, in other words, create a profile of people who spend more time with the students. So they, I remember one graduate overseas that he saw his supervisor on the day when he came and the day when he was recommending him for graduation. All the training was done by the postdoc. This was, I think, a world-class researcher. So we think we need to develop this postdoc program in South Africa. Of course, another area is that we do want to have these PhDs, but not only in the science area. We want to have them in the engineering and technology area as well. And then we are working with the Department of Education to find a way of strengthening both our universities of technology and using the science concepts to also provide, I think, training. And I realize our friend from Sasol is here. He said he wanted to talk to us at the end of this chair that we indulge and say we will approach them. And we think they also have a role to play in the training of students. Tax incentive, lack of awareness. It's a new program in terms of exactly how it's going to work, not about the program itself, Honorable Ensley. And then what we've now done, I think, is we've finalized the form, and I think as we speak, this is going to be gazette. There will be a notice in the gazette. I think Marjorie has just finalized it to try and raise awareness. But we're also going to have a roadshow. We have an invite from our friends at the JSE that we can partner with them and we can use them to invite the private sector, both big and small, you know, to publicize, I think, what these tax incentives are and how companies can benefit from this. So this is going to happen in terms of marketing this program. The tricky question around the second economy, I don't think you are unjustified to raise the concern that you're raising. And I think it is for that reason that the DSC is deciding to approach the cyber system. The first approach, if you remember, I talked about this program of COFISA, where we are learning with the Finns how to have innovation systems in the provinces. And one of the concerns that we have at the DSC is that when we get involved in this poverty alleviation project, after you've shown the technology transfer and that this can be used, we need to exit. However, our exit has got to be an exit that has a very clearly articulated handover strategy, and therefore we're beginning to work with the provincial structures to do that. Recently, we have engaged with Public Works that said the IDT, I think, is being given a responsibility as well to play a very, very important role in the rollout of these, and therefore we are looking at that. And then the third intervention from the DST is the proposal to set up the Public Benefit Foundation, which will be operating under the newly, or to be formed, the Technology Innovation Agency. So all of these are attempts and instruments to make sure that, you know, we have an institution that allows you to roll these projects out. However, the other problem and the other bottleneck has been the funding. Last year, I think we have an in-principle funding from the EU for something called sector budget support. I can't remember the exact amount. I think it's about 30, 40 million euros over the next 3 years to roll out, I think, projects of this kind.
So that's the one suite of challenges. The second suite of challenges, of course, and probably our friends at the CSIR would talk to this a little bit more when they come here, is that we are looking at a better interface between the town councils that are developing the technology and the community. Because in terms of some of the successes, we know sometimes the technology transfer is not the problem. The problem is the communities and the understanding of Amatram being a problem, sorry, a case in point, and many, many others where sometimes the failures of these projects is not because of the technology, but is the adoption. Or show that is the same thing with the panels, photovoltaic panels for energy provision in one of the rural areas in the Eastern Cape, where I'm told that people, rather than using it for energy provision, they were using it as tabletop because they were wondering why are they not able to get the same. So all of these things need to be understood, and the research and the HSMC will be working with the science council. So that's another intervention. But in terms of the focus on the project, whether it's income generating vis-a-vis, I don't think really we are choosing income generating projects at the expense of the others. Maybe the focus on what the report has talked about this time are probably income deriving projects, but I think the focus is not on that at all. On the energy, I've given an example of photovoltaic, as far as the energy that can be used in rural areas. On sanitation, I do know that there's a pilot project on sanitation. I can't remember. And the Buffalo City, and to look at a different way of sanitation. Cheap water, nothing specific, but at least those two examples do give you a sense that we are not choosing only income generating, but those that improve people's lives. I think the trip and the monitoring program there has just gone to mention.
No, thanks. I'll take the other two, three hands now. But I think the issue that Mr. Ainsley is raising as well, it's a matter where we're asking how sustainable are this project. Is it touch and go? Are we become ad hoc? Are we becoming ad hoc in this, some of the projects that we are doing? And does he have to look disappointed? So maybe we should flag it as an issue that we just need to go back to as we go. Whether I don't think there is a problem to go into income generating projects, but to say not at the expense of the ones that are actually making an impact in the economy. The second economy in particular. I know that Mr. Tebe has raised some of the matters of emphasis, and I think it's coupled with the issue that was raised by Mr. Mokas to say, you know, not necessarily quarterly reports, as we say, come every quarter here, and things like those, but just to say we've got a system of monitoring for a system that does not come into a way where we come into a point where, for instance, the Auditor General says, we leave this up to the end. This type of issues to anticipate some of the problems that you raised. So I think it was in that context that matter was raised. And the audit one, you haven't answered the question whether it's replenished. As people go out, we have immediate replacement and so on. I think that was just to say people are going out, we have replacements and so on. And maybe before we go to the next question, if you can just give your that please.
No, thanks, Chase. Yeah, what we did is that we appoint people at different things. When someone leaves, you don't, let's say the old committee members, the term of office doesn't come to an end all at once. You find that the person who comes with term of office will come to an end this month. And as he leaves, you either renew it or you get someone to stay so that the continuity to stay is forward continuity.
Lastly, I'm putting you on the spot now. If you say there is effective monitoring on the internship, I don't want an answer now, but you have to at least give us what are those monitoring instruments that are in place. So I'm flagging it as a matter that we might have to come back to you. All right. Let me take Mr. Blanchet, Mr. Nwabo, and then Mr. Nwabo.
Mr. Chairman, there are two things that appeared on the political and economic horizon of Southern Africa in recent months that I did not see being addressed in this report, which I think is extremely serious and should be addressed. The two is, first of all, global warming, which Al Gore brought to our attention, and its effects, and how it's going to affect the world. And we have not seen anything about it yet, and I do believe that we should address it. And the other one is poverty. we must realize that on our border we have a neighbor who is going, is becoming economically bankrupt, and a lot of people are coming this way. The existing poverty within South Africa, my colleague has touched on it, is going to be exacerbated because of that influx of people coming here. And therefore we need to somehow address it and say, how are we going to address it? And we've got two organizations reporting to us on both of these things. So one is the HSRC. And I do believe that the Department of Science and Technology must now give an instruction to the HSRC to investigate the science of poverty and the existence of poverty around the country. We can always sit here in Parliament and just talk about poverty, but there's a difference between the poverty in the rural areas and in the urban areas. There's a difference between the Northern Cape and the Western Cape as the poverty is experienced around the country. And therefore, the HSRC is in a similar situation than what the country was in the late 1920s, and I remarked about to this in my speech recently when we had the bill, that in those years, the Carnegie Commission made an investigation into South Africa as far as poverty was concerned, and they involved all the communities around the country to come up and say to them what was the extent of poverty around the country, and then they were able to address it. And out of that Carnegie Commission report in 1933 stemmed and developed the Welfare Department. And because the Welfare Department was established, some 6,000 NGOs, welfare NGOs, was later on established. So it became a massive thing, and because government was then able to understand and how to treat it, they were able to control poverty for a great many decades. We are again in that situation. And what's happening on our northern border is going to increase the poverty because a lot of people are coming across the border, they are coming to our urban centers, and in our urban centers, we now have to generate more energy, we now have to supply more water, we have a lot of things to do that just adds to the expenditure of an already industrialized area, and we're not able to deal with it. And therefore, I believe that the HSRC must be instructed to look at the effect that it's going to have on South Africa. If our neighboring countries, people are going to migrate towards our country whilst we are experiencing the problems of addressing the existing poverty, how is it going to affect us in the next decade, in the next 10 years? And that is part of the 10-year plan. We need to know in the 10-year plan what other threats are coming into the country and how are we addressing it. And for that reason, we not only have the HSRC, as there is a threat of climate change, the Agricultural Research Council should also be there. They are funded by us, by the department, and they must come back and say how do they see global warming and its effects on the actual agricultural production of South Africa. Because if we have this one threat of a migration coming towards our country, and on the other side, a lower production of agricultural products, there is two major threats looking at us, and I think the Department of Science and Technology must say to us whether they are going to address it, how they are going to address it, and let's at least start with a plan to see if it is really going to be that much of a threat. Because if it is not going to be a threat, then we should also say, all right, we don't have to budget for it.
Thanks, Mr. Blanchet.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to go back to the question where you have said that Cabinet approved the Martin Luther Capital and Innovation Fund program. I just want to understand exactly what does that mean? Because TBMR is a special technology from general nuclear technology. Does this mean that the cabinet is now has approved a new new program of development, nuclear technology students. If I'm talking about nuclear technology, I'm not talking about nuclear physics, I'm talking about reactor physics, because that is where everything should start. TBMR is under what you call small modular reactor technology, which it's the generation 4 initiative, it's called GIM. The third generation, the UBEX, are in the third generation. So, and understandably, very soon, we will be building, according to ESCOM, two nuclear power stations, which I think belong to the third generation, not the fourth generation. And in the recent interaction with TBMR and NNR, when I was asked by Parliament through the office of the chair, when we discussed with them, I found that NNR said they have a million questions about TBMR, which have not been answered, and so they can't license them. And when we asked each other, testimony, when we asked PBMR have told us that the people who were in the management before made a mistake of saying that these things are easy, they are not easy, they are very difficult. In fact, if you learn about sphere packing alone, it's a very advanced thing to understand the sphere and to make it critical. The kissing numbers of the sphere, all those things, it's a very involved thing. So, when we say that human capital on this, we are starting at the other end, because of course you start understanding the regression to physics, to reactor physics itself, right up to understanding the nuclear power station design, before you then go into. In fact, if you want criticality, it's so difficult to just determine the criticality of a small modular reactor because of this sphere packing thing. It's got what we call, instead of simply the generation 3 initiative, it's simply a neutron collider. But if you talk about this, it's a probability of many things called double heterogeneity. So it's a very difficult thing which professors are trying to just calculate what they call the Wigner problem, which is about how to get the factor that makes such sphere critical with all these bases that are there. So it's a very important concept. It's not like people think it's easy. So that's why I'm saying that probably if we're talking about that, we want to develop human capital in terms of nuclear technology, reactor physics. That's how we should start. And we can't start at the other end. There's no way that that will start. We'll spend a lot of money for nothing. Thank you very much.
All right. I've got two more hands coming. I've got tomorrow and after tomorrow. I'll take them after.
Global warming and poverty. HSRC, I think there is a study on poverty at the HSRC at the moment, which is led by the president. So what we could do is just to find out a bit more about that study and maybe brief the committee appropriately. I can't remember the heading, but it's to understand the, first define poverty, understand the dynamics of poverty. So I don't think it is difficult to then add the impacts of the migration as part of that. In fact, the fifth grand challenge of the innovation plan that we talked about looks at, you know, the dynamics and the movement of people in the globalized world, and what impact that it has on other countries, not only from the poverty perspective, from the disease kind of challenges and terrorism and all of these things. So that's a grand challenge that we have organized and began to say, how do we get a number of groups led by the HSRC and others to give us an understanding of this. So I think, Chair, my first proposal is that maybe we can either get the HSRC to give you the details of this poverty study, and in fact they will be coming to see you soon.
I think it's the macro social trends report, is it? That's what he's trying to look at. Yeah.
And then on global, what we'll do again, we can wait until the 10-year plan presentation. One of the grand challenges is global warming. And as I say, there are two aspects of this that we are looking at. DEET will look at means and mechanism, environmental affairs and tourism, of what comes out of the science that says these are the impacts in the Southern African region and the rest of the continent from global climate change. Of course, for you to do that, you must have good modeling tools. You must make sure that you have the capacity of researchers that work in this area. And this is something that we are setting up. We're setting up a center of excellence or competence in this area called ACCESS. I can't remember what the acronym stands for. But it will be pulling a number of groups at the CSIR, University of Cape Town, Rhodes University, that looks at the tools that you need to develop to understand climate change as a science. And then later on with the department to say what are the implications and the impacts of this and what mitigation strategies that you need to do. So that's what the grand challenge the 10-year plan will be looking at. And I'm sure that the ARC will be a partner in this regard. The PBMR, FRIP, Human Capital, four things. We are currently working with the Department of Public Enterprise and Minerals and Energy, Trade and Industry, as well as Foreign Affairs, to ask a question that says, if we want to roll out these pressurized water reactors that you're talking about, in the next 10, 15, 20 years, should we continue to buy them as a complete package, or should we buy the first one as a complete package, but the second one have half of the work being done in South Africa, and the third one completely manufacturing this in South Africa? It's a project called SAPRO, the South African project. Still in its infancy stages. We've looked at a number of countries that have developed their nuclear manufacturing capability in the same way where you use your procurement of your state-owned enterprise in the area of energy to develop your industrial base. Again, when that is ready, the indication is that this team should have something for cabinet probably late this year, early next year. When that study has been done, it looked at Korea, it looked at Canada and how they've used it, and there are useful lessons from them, including, I think, the U.S. and our friends from French. You then have a strategy that says you are going to need a nuclear capability of your own in the country in the next 20 years or so. And then on the basis of that, what are the skills that you need in the nuclear energy? Not only the skills, but the knowledge that you need. So that's what's been approved. That we can go ahead and begin to develop the appropriate skills, not only for the PBMR, but for the nuclear reactor sector as a whole and the energy sector as a whole. And of course, we don't do this alone, as you can see. We do this by working with both, I think, the Department of Minerals and Energy with the state-owned enterprises and DPE. That regard, and that's the one part. The second part is that in these research chairs that we talked about, we have I think three of them have been awarded in this area. I think one at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, one at the University of Pretoria, and one at the University of Northwest, where you are going to have, I think, research chairs. The agreement is that, remember, in these research chairs, that if you don't have your own local capacity, you bring people from outside to be able to develop this. And again, we can give you the details of these research shares. And then the point that you raised about the regulator is something very, very serious, because it's fine for the NNNR to say that what is being asked by the PBMR is difficult, but I think it's also incumbent upon us to make sure that we put people in these regulators who understand the implications of regulatory in the nuclear space, because what we have found is that people sometimes are scared to take decisions because I'm afraid maybe they don't have the know-how. and they don't know the implications of the decisions that they are making. And one of the conversations that we started to have is to say, how do we ensure that we strengthen the regulator so that the regulators are not only looking at risks, I think, around the development of these sectors, but how do you develop these sectors in an environment where technology continues to grow? It's not only the nuclear regulator where we've identified this problem, it's the same in the biotechnology. So these are some of the things that I think we are negotiating with others. So I think, sure, that's
I'm going to take the last two hands, and if there's any last fight, we will do that. But maybe we might be able to leave here after strike. But I'll be also learning from, take off of the queue from members. My sense is that we might have to just have you back after all these other institutions have presented. Maybe just not the full presentation, just specific issues that we might want to follow up on here. The PBMR, I think we must also start to get some collaboration with the other portfolio committees. Because I know that while there is excitement in some quarters on the PBMR process, there is some discomfort within Parliament as well about the money we're spending on this, the certainty, and so on and so on. Some of us have gone through the historical evolution of the PBMR and why Germany did certain things and what China is doing now, the money that we're spending, and what we're looking into, the timeline, whether we're looking at the timeline vis-a-vis the money already spent. I think we just want to get certainty from where we are that the taxpayers' money is also used wisely. The point that Mr. Blanchet is raising, I think it's an unfortunate thing that after the Carnegie report, because unfortunately it was dealing with the poor white problem, we have not, after integration, gone into there to look into exactly what is the impact, the size, and things. So sometimes we've just been hitting the road running ourselves. We might have to pause and say, how do we deal with those problems? Take into account the influx, the agricultural threat, global warming, all those other things that are on our plate now. So it's a matter that I think we shouldn't lose. Noting what Mr. Tedder also said about the macro-social trends report, whether it's addressing the peripheral issues or the exact root of the problem. One of the issues that I think we have not even touched is the question of unemployment. Poverty is one thing, unemployment is something that has invaded us for a long time. We had in 1998 a presidential job summit which we thought would be able to give us some sort of progress out of that thing, but we still found wanting now. So the challenges are still enormous, colleagues and comrades. I think it's important that we recognize that and ensure that we move forward. I'm noting this issue so that we must not lose them, and I don't think we just here to vent them out and leave them unattended to. Mangal, and then Mr. Mokal, I think on my list you'll be the last unless there are other issues in the ministry.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks, DG. Due to the high level of waste, can the department be in a position to find out which of the countries would be in a position to which South Africa can export the waste so that they get rid of that waste? Is there a possibility of doing that? In last year we did a call on innovation, and one of the presenters said South Africa is capable of moving from 1% to 1.6. Is that possible? Are we in the process of moving to that through R&D? You spoke about 21 research chairs having been launched, and you are saying 50 more are still going to be. We're talking of the total of how many research chairs in South Africa as a whole. And you are giving batteries, as well as last year when we went to Stratford, they were giving quite big amounts of batteries for PhD students. Through that, are we improving on our data? And in your presentation, we're saying some of those researchers are absorbed into the system. I'm people you mean within South Africa, are there any of them who are on exodus outside of South Africa? And you further spoke up, you prevented indigenous abundance through genetics. Is that going to be done through this third component of the ICEGB or enrolling? And if it's enrolling, why, what is exactly being done? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I would like to thank the DG for expressing their willingness to go deeper into the innovation plan, the 10-year innovation plan, and your receptiveness to receive such a presentation, Chair, the knowledge economy as well. Chair, my question is more about balance between researchers and teachers or lecturers at tertiary institutions. There was recently comment made by student organizations and individuals, for example, at UCT, that the academic year has been shortened. The number of lectures, the number of tutorials have been shortened at tertiary institutions because lecturers are spending more time doing the research than actual teaching. Now, we've got to get the balance right. I'm not sure how that could be achieved. Is it a fight between GST and the Department of Education? But I think it's a challenge that needs to be addressed. Students certainly might feel at some point reason to protest they're not getting value for money because people are too busy doing research. And that may be a legitimate concern. A second issue about balance is, and you use an interesting example, DG, when you mentioned the knowledge economy in a particular sector, for example, forestry in Sweden. I spoke to someone just 2 weekends ago who was a specialist in importing wood for wine barrels and for the fruit packing industry. I asked him, why are you importing wood? We have enough wood here. He says, no, we don't have a particular type of wood. It's pine. He says, we're cutting down our pine trees. And we're not replanting them because his words were, the greenies are telling us not to replant it. But that's increasing the cost of production in the wine industry, which makes us less competitive in the international markets, with the EU subsidizing winemakers in Europe. Competition from South America, we're just becoming more uncompetitive in the wine sector, for example, as this one issue, balance between our environmental objectives, climate change, global warming, and our economic objectives. Also, that you made it quite clear that the cost per square meter in the building industry has increased, also as a result of certain wood not being available, etc., etc. And it's just an issue about balance, and I'm not sure if that sort of debate takes place in an appropriate forum, which forum that is, I suppose. Thank you.
Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, I'm not so sure about the countries to which you can export with, but I know that the Japs, depending on the level of waste, they sometimes import waste and reprocess. I think this is something perhaps as part of our re-entering into, I think, the nuclear energy. The Japanese. So I think it's something that we probably have to look at, but I'm not so sure. I'm really not an expert in this sector. It's something that we can really investigate, but I'm sure it's possible. We can move to 1.6%, but one of our biggest concerns and our biggest worries is whether we have enough capacity to go to 1.6%. So my sense, it's just my intuition, is that we should evolve into 1.6% over time, and I guess 5 to 7 years would be the right time to expect us to be targeting that, because we really can have the money, but if you don't have the brain to use this money effectively, I think it would be money that would just disappear. Yes, 50 chairs plus 21 would put us at 75, 76. The target is 210 of these chairs by 2010. So in the next 2 to 3 years, we should get another 100 or something, 126 or so. The GIPSA targets and PhDs and bursaries, I think from our contribution, we are probably not close to the target, especially if we look at the engineering and technology skills. And this is a concern for us, and one of the things that we are trying to engage with our friends at DOE is to find a way in which the universities of technology can play a role in this regard, as I've said before. It's not an easy task because some of them need to develop their research capacity from scratch, and therefore, at a policy level, one of the things that we are trying to encourage and debate is let's make sure that we have the right set of incentives for the universities of technology to move into this direction. And again, it's a subject of another day where we've tended to incentivize the university for producing publications. Now, in the universities of technology, it's not the publications alone that matter, it's the patents. It's the research reports that they do for private sector companies, and if we don't design a set of incentives, and this is not only the DFT, in fact, it's the mandate of the Department of Education, so that you can encourage the universities of technology to move this side of the chain. Of course, we can have an influence on the science councils, which already are playing a role in this regard. The Exodus, I don't think I can comment on that. I would not know. What we do see, though, is high-level skills coming back to South Africa because of these projects like the PBMR. I suppose when we have the pressure water reactors program on technology, they will come. Last time, I think, when we at this committee, we were trying to present to you the AGA bill, and one of the things that we did was to extend an invitation to the committee to visit the Pinelands office, where you could see the high-level work that we are doing on the SKA, and they will probably show you one or two youngsters that came back in South Africa because of this project. So I can't comment on the exodus, but all I'm saying is that some of these initiatives are beginning to bring people into South Africa, so maybe there's a leveling off. And then the grand challenge on farmer to farmer and the focus on indigenous knowledge, genetics, and biodiversity. The ICGVB, we will work with them, but it's not going to be the main, I think, agent or institution to implement, I think, this grand challenge, because it's got international rules of engagement, and it's useful in the sense that we'll have a number of overseas researchers coming to the ICGB, International Center for Genetic Engineering, but I don't think we can run our national programs within that. We just need to find a way in which we can leverage the fact that we'll have these researchers coming to South Africa to strengthen our own program. Mr. Mokel, the interface between ourselves and DOE in terms of the right amount. If you remember what I said earlier on, that's the contribution as DFT that we can make in terms of making sure that there's the right balance. We can only strengthen the postdoctoral program that I talked about. Because if you have a large number, a large cohort of your postdoc within your group, in the research group, that frees the professors from sitting and mentoring students on a day-to-day basis. And I would assume a number of senior lecturers and associate professors. So by having this cohort, you sort of delegate the responsibility of the day-to-day management of the researchers
and you still get your publications because they do the research and you just look at the management. So we hope that will probably alleviate the problem, but we are not in a position to state what is the right ratio in this regard. I think it's something that probably we need to engage with our Department of Education in this regard. That's another interface issue. The balance in terms of what I mean, the example you've given is a specific example, but what I hear you saying is, where does the discussion of the importance of looking at your environment is important, but also your sustainable economic growth? So I suppose you are saying that China has decided to ignore some of the environmental things in part of. We do have a bilateral with our friends at TIT, and we'll try and have that conversation at that level. I'm going to give you a specific example at a high level with the indulgence chair. We are looking at the possibility of developing a titanium industry in South Africa. Now, titanium is used in jewelry because it's nice and a bit more expensive, and we've learned recently that a lot of women are now allergic to gold jewelry. So we need more titanium jewelry. It's used in the in the health industry in terms of the stents for the heart, and it's also used in the industrial automotive and the aerospace sector. We have engaged with some international companies that have said they get their titanium supply from other parts of the world, and they're not comfortable with having a single supplier. And there's a raw material in South Africa that could be used to develop these titanium components in South Africa. Now, the challenge with this raw material is that it sits on the heritage site on the east coast of this country. And we've said to our friends that we will have to have a strategic conversation to say how do we deal with this challenge, because it's nice to have a heritage site where we have lots of raw material that can generate a multi-billion dollar industry in titanium. So what do we do as a country? Do we continue to say we want to keep this heritage site, or can we keep it and still be able to develop this industry at the same time? That will give us a competitive advantage. So we do have those conversations at that level, but maybe that's not high enough. I'm sure at a higher political level, these conversations have to happen as part of what the development state obligations are, both on the environmental side as well as the development for the country.
Interesting. No, they do work, DJ. In some jurisdictions, I think Australia has tried that model. Can't remember the name of the place and succeeded. No, there is a place in KwaZulu-Natal where they tried, and in South Africa. So there are sensitivities there. So at a high level discussion, we'll have to take all these things into account. I've got the last two hands, members, which is Mr. Ditebe and Mr. Norman. And I think from after that we should close. I'm told that lunch will be provided and available and is ready at the old assembly from here. Please, Asian team, you may want to join us and our visitors. But let's take the last two hands and our few last comments before we start.
Thank you very much, Chair.
You promised me that you're going to be brief. You have also given this to me. Let me.
I'll be very brief. Chair, I see that on page 154, the human resources section, in terms of employment and vacancies, we have the 16.19% vacancy rate. Not that bad, but my question related to that is, does this mean, in respect of the individual programs, that those programs, as a result of the vacancy rate in individual programs, they aren't necessarily operating at full capacity? The kinds of vacancies that exist at the moment, are they of a nature that would not enable that particular program to function at full capacity? And so where are we with regard to FP7? I'm glad about the COPISA development, but you know, just if you could fill us in on that one. The last one, Chairperson, is the charge that the DG referred to as a social transformation. We were told that there is a
actually the rate of awareness about these particular platforms that I'm concerned about, because if we are to effect any societal transformation, and in keeping with that spirit of the part of government to ensure the deracialization of the economy, surely there are many people who know how to, who work in the metals industry, I would put it that way, who have not necessarily acquired the necessary skills, but who have the know-how and so forth, that means they've got that lifelong experience. What is it that we are doing? I know it's something that is perhaps a bit far away from you, but this particular manual from National Treasury, which binds all departments, says that there must be concern not only about input and activities and outputs and outcomes, but also the impact. So my question is that's the impact of the question at the end of this.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, mine was just a follow-up because I thought probably I missed the DG. I heard him talking about pressurized water reactors, it's the technology of Quebec. Is that the technology that you are going to pursue? Because if it is that technology, I would wonder if you would be in the same path with the United States, because that's why they are fighting against Iran and them, because that is the technology that produces 30% of the weapons grade material. So I do not know really if you that's the technology of Latin America. I understood that they have introduced Generation 4 initiative because it avoids that. That's why Quebec, because it was designed exactly for the other people. It produces that 30% weapons grade material. Of course, they had a good relation with South Africa at that time, and that is why now there are many powerful guys in Quebec, because the technology rests, the people who run the technology of Quebec is United States and France. Some of the systems in Quebec, they are monitored day to day in France as the processes that they flow. And so I think it's some of the things we have to know about that. And don't find ourselves engaging a program that is going to put you in collision, in direct collision with President Bush.
Do what our Bush does. What our peace here. We're still developing, so we don't want to be another Iraq, isn't it?
Thanks, Chair. This is not our choice, Honorable Noah. This is we piggybacking on what ESCOM has chosen. So we're saying whatever procurement package they have, we've not been involved in the choice of the reactor. We say we'll then develop the skills and the know-how to support a plan where, as part of your procurement strategy, you develop your own industrial base. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I think foreign affairs sits in this team, to look at these issues in terms of the implications of this thing. But one of the things I've learned as a DG is you need to know how far your decision-making goes, and we are not involved in the decisions of which reactor, I suppose, has been done elsewhere. We're only saying if it's been decided, we will then provide the necessary skills of the DG. I'm going to disappoint Honorable Duterte because I don't have the figures of FP7, but I think I was told that the heat rate so far is sitting at about 80% of the proposals that were submitted. But we can give you those details probably by the end of the day through your chair, if that's okay. And Moahi will deal with, if you want, even on the impacts and what's happening at CUT and the vacancy rate. Even the new package that we're setting up with the vacancy rate.
I think in terms of vacancy rate, it's a cause for concern, basically. And what you do to mitigate it is to
employ people on contract to deal with that. Because what you don't want is to employ wrong people on a different day to contract with them for a long time. I think at the moment you are pretty low, I think you are pushing 10 or less than 10%. But it's a moving target. You reduce it to people who are in government, people speculating in government. But our target is to reach about 5 or 6%.
Thanks, and that's usually generally the picture across the program, given the relationship picture. The impact thing, I think we've developed our own M&A evaluation within the DST, and one of the expectations of this unit is to work with the current counters and startups to make sure that not only do we worry about, you know, the outputs, but for instance, CSR trained PhDs and they leave the CSR, what impacts, you know, where do they go, and therefore can we find a way of tracking them? I thought that was what we were asking for, if I'm not mistaken. So I think this is something that we are strengthening within the DST, and as you rightfully point out, we are trying to look at this document in terms of what it means within the science system and how we can provide that information to the president so that they, you know, we can contribute to that monitoring and evaluation.
DJ, I'm going to give you your closing remarks, but just to remind you that if you're called Director General, that means your decision-making ability and power is part general. You know? So don't shortchange yourself to say that you can't enter certain terrain. You know, members, we've raised a lot of matters here, and I must say that I'm also on a learning curve. Please don't understand that I'm very brand new in some of the matters that you raise. But some of the issues, that particularly the one that you raised, Mr. Noble, are highly charged, the importation and exportation of waste material. It's a matter that I think as South Africa is, there are some, at some point there was a move to import some of the waste material because we thought we had storage facilities in Falcon, for instance, that it was rejected. So this is a matter that I think needs to be decided that we need to go on. One of the questions that I have, and you don't necessarily have to answer now, as we go on, in terms of the R&D and the target 1%, 1.6%, and things like this, our comparison that you have seen in our graphs and the bar charts here, we've compared ourselves with developed countries. You see, how do we fare with countries, developing countries like ourselves? And I'm not necessarily pushing for an answer, I'm just saying that if you compare ourselves realistically, let's just check how we're doing, not to one better figure, but just to see, because the impact of our investment can also be absorbed within the region and so on and so on. So we must be able to check how we fare there. In some departments that I won't mention now, you know, once we do a lot of work, research, innovation, and so on, sometimes we become partner shops. You see, we just don't do our own research. We just import some things that people have done, give it a label, and whatever, whether we patent it and so on and so on. We must be able to say, yes, South Africa. And then we work out reinventing the wheel. Because research does not start here. What happened to a lot of research that was done before, in terms of implementation, innovation, and things that we are saying we are having to a 10-year program. So we should be able to distinguish South Africa initiated research, if any, and the research that we're basically taking from other parts, so that we check how much we put into our origination and how much we take from our partnering, you see. Because it's important to make that distinction in that field. I was shocked at some point to learn that we still import a lot of toilet paper for the country. A basic thing that I think that's something that there's a lot of research done on this matter. We know how to do it. It's done here, but in terms of who takes that problem forward, I think it's a matter that needs to be dealing with some of the matters that Mr. Blanchet raised earlier on. Obviously, we have spoken about a lot of things, including I still have to study some of the acronyms. I didn't ask questions because I didn't want to sound like a moron. So I still have to go back to complain. Yeah. So that I just ensure that when I speak about some of the metals, I know what I'm talking about. One other thing, DJ, that you might have to consider. We're putting our children through a long process of academic learning, let me put it that way, without any break in between. I've seen, if you take them from the junior degree level, PhD, and we push them to doctors and things like that. And I think that it's important to realize the burnout that goes with that type of process as well. So I'm just raising it because I know I've dealt with the situation of two of that nature where we pump our students into and then without any proper break in between. I think the old regime did very well through their constructions in the past, taking you off the field and taking you back again, just experiential learning and this kind of. I'm not suggesting that we do it. I'm just saying we should check the impact of some of the methods that we use. Let me leave these methods right there. And with understanding that some of the issues we will come back to, and we might have to come back to you, Gigi, like I said earlier, with some questions that are still outstanding, some methods that we need to take forward. That will also inform some of our progress going forward, because I think it's important that we do that. Your process about that.
Thank you. So we do promise to come and share with you this 10-year innovation plan, knowledge-based economy, including, I think, the high-level OECD report issued. The second point is that what we could do at that presentation is to give our special program manager maybe a little bit of airtime about the things that we are doing in the department to make sure that we have operational efficiency. There are a couple of issues that were raised here that speak to that. Here I'm referring to things like the vacancy rate. We are setting a target of about 8%, and we want to stick to that. The controls in the department and the work that we started with our internal audit, we will probably share with you. And the process that we have in the DSC about quarterly monitoring of things so that you can have just a high level sense of that. We will, I don't think there's anything much on the other government department interface issues. There are a couple of questions, I think, that have been raised around the DOE, ourselves, the DST with environment. I can only say that we make a lot of noises in the classes of government to raise issues where they are interface issues, so I don't think there's anything for that, what I'm coming back. But maybe the fourth area that I've identified with a set of issues, PBMR, next generation reactors, at the right time perhaps just to come and talk about that. And at PBMR, there are two issues. The one is the cost stage, which we can find for you. And, the other one, I think, is the waste issue and the quality issue. But again, there we rely on our colleagues of both DME and TPE. But if it's something where you probably want us to have a APG view on this thing and what the DST's contribution is. So those are the four things that I think. Thanks.
DG team members and colleagues and our listeners, thank you very much. I think we did justice to some of the discussions that we had yesterday. Obviously, it's in the nature of discussions that you never been able to exhaust them. Even if we call you back again, we want you back again at some time. So it never ends. Members, our meetings are adjourned. Please join us for lunch at the old assembly. I hope the list is okay now. It has been addressed as well as the